whole life. I'm going to get a little professional. We went to Atlanta, and that's that city, a big part of me growing up. It's my granny and pop-pop's home, you know. That's where we go for vacation, that's where I go. And in my own life, my family moved a lot between, we moved from Orlando to Kansas City, and of course I moved to Chicago, and Quincy, and here. All that fun stuff to say, you know, Atlanta's always been there, and it's always been Grammy and Pop-Pop's Atlanta, and I always love going there. And so when I go there, I get nostalgic. And the other thing that's kind of happened is, I got a little boy, I got a little girl, and so I'm trying to remember what it was like to be a kid. There's that old Mr. Rogers quote. He says, like, when he's asked, what's the best advice you could give a parent? He says, don't forget what it was like to be a child, right? And you kind of access that, so I have empathy. It helps me teach them. So I'm thinking, and I'm in Atlanta, and I'm just full of this nostalgia. And I start thinking about my relationship with our church, my relationship to you guys. There's a lot of ways to describe it and talk about it. And one of the reasons I was particularly thinking about that in this nostalgic mood was because, you know, on vacation during retreat, you really need to sit and reflect and think about what you're doing. Are you living your God? Are you living God's life that He has for you? Are you obeying Him? Are you acknowledging His will? So I'm having this moment, I'm thinking about it, and my mind goes back to the church I grew up in. And I've never really felt like I belonged in a church. I've never been a Christian that quite neatly fit into the look. I never talked the way Christians think you're supposed to talk when you're a pious guy. I've never had the sense of humor that you're supposed to have. I've been in the church my entire life. I'm a very church person. And I still, however, have never felt like I belonged in a church. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that, you know, I don't really get excited about the same things church people get excited about. I don't care as much about the music. I am a musician. My dad was in the Navy band. I've been a drummer my whole life. And when I listen to church music, when I hear a 1-4-5 progression, I see a backbeat. I hear someone a little off key. The lyrics are fine, but the meter is a little off, or maybe someone's missing vowels, or, you know, so I always had a difficult time connecting it through music. I've also struggled to connect through, like, the architecture. A lot of people really care about church buildings. I've never really cared about church buildings, because when I grew up in church, it was not a well-to-do congregation. It was a poor neighborhood in the Ocoee, which is like an Orlando suburb. And so we didn't have a big, awesome place. In fact, my dad, his drum set was this beginner kit he got from in the late 60s. So that thing, he bought it, it was white. We still have it. It's yellow, y'all. It is the yellowest, supposed to be white drum set. Why? We were good at just playing bars and gigs and doing all this Navy stuff. That's not a rich man's kit. So that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with everyone's instrument they've had since they were kids. And everyone's just playing and partying. And when they come up to the stage in these churches, the church that I grew up in, you see so much worship and power, but, you know, I never expect to have that in a church, because that's rare, it's beautiful. That's a robust music culture. And you don't really have that everywhere. So I don't usually end up in churches that have music that I'm about, you know. Mostly because I'm into death metal or Trinidadian gospel, and that's kind of odd. I don't think that, not a lot of people are into that stuff, so I don't expect to find that in churches. Why do I go to church? Why do I get involved in church? Why has my life been about church? I'll be honest with you, my life isn't about church. I don't care about 501c3 organizational principles. I don't care about the best practices of administrative tasks. That stuff doesn't excite me. I'm sure it doesn't seem to excite you. Why am I in church? Do I like to read? No, I hate reading. Y'all, I hate reading. I cannot sit still to read a book. I've never really enjoyed it. I've read a lot. It's been a grind. So why am I in the church? Do I like to read the big book? I do. Why? Well, it is a weird book. But you know, there's this guy in that book. It's Jesus, gentlemen. And every time I go to a church, he's there. My whole life, when I've gone to a church, there's been this Jesus guy. Maybe the music wasn't something I connected with, but I did connect to a way to talk about this Jesus. Maybe it wasn't the building when I moved to this Baptist congregation in Independence. Just red brick, clearly Baptist, just so Baptist. Think of Baptist in your mind, just think Baptist, and then, you know, there you go. And when that building bothered me, I was like, what is this place? What an odd way to build a building. What's the point of this? Well, it's just tradition. But they talk about Jesus in that place. And I learned about him, and I learned more about him. And they also talk about the Bible in that place. That made me really excited. All these steps, all these places, the one thing that motivated me was Jesus. And to be honest, mostly despite everything else, despite the fact that I had relationships with people I probably would have never talked to because I was in a church. And probably despite the fact that, man, when the pastor said, all right, let's get up and let's shake hands. Man, I don't want to make eye contact with anyone today. Now I got to make contact with like 120 people. I barely came to church today. Pastor's put me on blast. All right, whatever, I'll do it. Because I knew that pastor was going to preach Jesus. I was willing to suffer through anything because Jesus, through the corniest sermons with the weirdest titles, you know, I listen to pastors and preachers. I don't like listening to sermons. I don't know if you can tell. I have a pretty unique style when I preach. And a lot of that's because I don't like sermons. They're tough now. I guess I have to say I think they're too preachy. Isn't that weird coming from a pastor? Why do I go to church? It's the Jesus guy. It's the Jesus guy. My whole life, I feel like I've just been pulled by this Jesus guy into these communities that I would have never gone into. Can I be clear with you right now? Never in my life would have I moved to Carrollton if I didn't feel like Jesus dragged me. Let's go back to Ephesians 4, and I want to tell you what we're talking about. This is Paul, the apostle. And the way we're supposed to understand this from the author, Paul's in prison, and this is kind of like his kind of big work. This is kind of his table of contents, this letter of Ephesians. It's odd. It doesn't seem to have an occasion. Paul has a purpose when he's writing Romans. Very early on earth, he's trying to establish contact with a new base of operations for his missionary work in the Western Mediterranean, God willing. In Colossians, he's trying to address heresy, so he writes the letter. In Corinthians, the Corinthian church has all kinds of problems, and so he's trying to get them sorted out. Ephesians doesn't have an occasion. He just writes this letter. And as you read through it, it's clear. It's almost like he's working through his greatest hits. You have really big parts from like Galatians and Colossians, Romans. You see some stuff in, you know, from Philippians. It really feels like almost like a table of contents. So we're supposed to picture Paul late in his ministry in prison, bound in chains, and trying to reach out to Ephesus, which would have been probably the biggest church in his church life. Ephesus would have been about like a mega church, as far as megachurch could have been experienced in the first century. So he's writing this big, kind of magnum opus to Ephesus, this big church, and he says, I therefore, a prisoner for the Lord. That's how he wants them thinking. Me, Paul, imprisoned because of Jesus for the Lord. First thing, that's who Paul wants to be established for. I urge you then, as this prisoner, to walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you have been called. Now here is the plain fact of the matter today. Jesus has called you. And when Jesus calls you, it's not a polite suggestion. We're to think of the Lord sending an invitation that is gracious enough to be polite. But he doesn't have to do that. When he calls you, he's saying, you should follow me. And you're supposed to hear it in that, oh, I need to follow Jesus. I need to put this all aside and I need to follow Jesus. Paul says, I urge you, now that Jesus has called you in this dread way, that you live a life worthy of this noble, onerous calling. How would you do that? How could you possibly do that? Well, Paul is gracious. You do it with all humility, with all gentleness, and with patience. Why these virtues? What about really good at arguing in public? What about voting correctly? What about being rich enough to buy cool things for church? No, what does he say? He says, humility, gentleness, patience, and bearing with one another in love. Love. When you go to church, you're supposed to love people. You're supposed to be gentle and patient. Do you see? All these virtues, when he said, I, a prisoner, am thinking about how you should live your life since God has called you, what should that look like? It should look like love for each other. Devotion. Activity. Proactivity. Making every effort to maintain the what? Unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace. Think about your relationship to this church, and this is just you. You need to be honest with yourself. Do you consider yourself seriously as someone who has at every opportunity done everything you can to preserve the unity of the Spirit in this church? Have you done everything you can to preserve what? The bond of peace. Do you see what Paul's talking about here? His grand vision for your life is in a church. The worthy way to live the calling you've been called to is to be connected to a body of believers and to love them. And with everything you can, keep that body together in peace. There is one body, Paul says. How many? One. There is one Spirit. How many? Just as you were called to the one hope of your calling. You know, we all have a bunch of different motivations for a lot of the things we do in our lives, but we only have one hope. Christians have one hope. And if you have any other hope, then this community is at stake. A big part of the reason churches fail is because we all end up getting a bunch of different hopes. Boy, I hope the music gets better. Boy, I hope they fix these pews, man. I've been sitting on them and my back hurts. I hope they can figure out what translation to put on the text and to read in the reading. I mean, if we could just get that together, wouldn't that be nice? What is the one hope? The hope we are to have is that by faith in Jesus Christ, we escape sin and death. That's our hope. That we experience the resurrection that Jesus experienced and participate in a new creation founded under his lordship. That's our hope, and that's it. One hope, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of who? All, who is above all and through all and in all. In this community, who is the center of this community? In this worthy calling that he has made you a part of, you are in the middle of this church. And the center, the hub, that we all extend out and create this wheel, that we all spoke around, it is God, Jesus, and the Holy Spirit. Not you. Not me. Not anyone. It is God. It is the Lord Jesus. And here's the giant thing that Paul says, verse 7. But grace as a gift, as in faith, as a tangible, wonderful blessing. A gift was given to each of us according to the measure of Christ's gift. So Jesus walked around, you need to think of that this way, and he gave each of you a specific gift. He gave Kevin a Kevin for Kevin. He gave Roger a Roger gift. A gift, a specific gift, distinct. Kevin got a different gift than Roger got. It's just between you and Jesus, though? No. Therefore, it is said, when he ascended on high, I need you to pay attention to this. He led a host of captives. It says, he made captivity itself a captive. I disagree with this translation, though it's better. What we need to understand is Paul's quoting the Psalms, and the Psalms have all kinds of wonderful songs. They're the cheerleading manual of a nation dedicated to marching against God's enemies on behalf of God's will. So a lot of the Psalms are meant to be songs that armies sing on their way into battle. This happens to be such a song. This is more of a hip-hop song. This is something where you should imagine someone quite audacious and bold and confident with swagger, singing like he owns the place. That's what you need to hear when you hear what Paul says here. When he ascended on high, he led a host of captives, and he gave gifts to people. And Paul says, in saying he ascended, what does it mean but that he also descended into the lower regions of the earth? He who descended is the one who also ascended far above the heavens, that he might fulfill all things. What is Paul doing? What are you talking about? Here's what's tough about what Paul's doing here. He's talking about some extra stuff to some extra people who would know. This is literally parenthetical. He's just saying, I know that you know that there's some controversy on interpreting how this applies to Christ. If that's you, I got all this. Believe me, I thought of it, okay? Can we now move on? But his point is, these are the Psalms. Ascending and descending refers to going back and forth to Jerusalem in the Old Testament. And at the very top of Jerusalem was the temple. So when you ascend to the highest point, you are ascending to the temple. In fact, the temple, Mount Zion, isn't even the highest hill next to a bunch of hills. The point is, that is the central point. And this psalm refers to the king leading his army down to fight the bad guys. And after he's whooped on them, he's taken all their stuff because he beat them so good. And now he's dragging these captives. He's dragging this procession of power, this display of wealth and conquest. Again, think about hip-hop, because no one really nails this feel quite like a hip-hop artist. He's got his grill covered in gold. And we all think, why does he want to look like that? And the answer is, because I'm richer than you. That's why. He's showing off. Why has he got ridiculous rings and watches? Does he actually care about this stuff? No. I'm just showing off how wealthy I am. That's the point of this bravado. And we're supposed to imagine Jesus having whooped the enemy, having whooped death so badly that he has literally gone into hell, grabbed a bunch of people, and is now just parading out like it's nothing. And he's like, hey, check it out. Here you go. Have some fun. I don't even want all this stuff. Y'all want some? That's what we're supposed to be imagining here. And what are the gifts that God has given his church? What is the captive? What is the plunder that Jesus is just extravagantly lavishing his church with? What is it? He gave the apostles, verse 11. He gave Paul. He gave Peter. These are people he's captivated. These are Paul, the prisoner in Ephesus. This is me. He has taken captive these people. He has freed them from hell and their own sin. And he's looking at his people and he wants to show off his wealth. And so instead of Jesus going up in some ridiculous shoes, Air Jordans, I guess, I don't know. I'm starting to lose my depth. I don't know a ton about hip-hop culture. But he's essentially just saying, here you go. I have a servant. You want to know how the best way to live a life of God? Well, check this out. I'll give you Peter. Check this out. And guess what? You all need it all. Every apostle wants to all of them. This is Jesus just giving people that he's captured, enslaved. And some of them are apostles. Some of them are prophets. Some of them were evangelists. And then pastors and teachers. I'm the pastor and teacher. That's where I am. Kind of like this low ranking, not as cool, not as big in the whole thing. I mean, an apostle is a founding figure. We don't get these guys anymore. And the prophets were very important to call churches on their stuff. Prophets are really ruthless if you let them be. And evangelists, those are the guys who really know how to help people get on board. But once you get people on board, you need someone to take care of them. Evangelists are bad at that. They got to get going. They got to get moving. They can't sit still. Pastors and teachers, that's the kind of guy I am. The guys who stay. The guys who stay. And what is the point of these slaves that God has thrown at you to show off how badly he has just whooped on Satan? What's the point of that? For building up the body of Christ. So when God broke me out of prison and said, here you go, Dan, you belong to Carrollton now. What did he tell me was my job? It's to build you up for the work of ministry. To be the body of Christ. This is the most important thing that happens today. Is that you hear this. Okay, ready? My job is to help you do ministry. Did you see that? To equip the saints for the work of ministry. Pastors and teachers don't do the work of ministry, do they? You do. Don't mean I'm off the hook. That means if you guys aren't doing this, I'm not doing my job. And you guys notice, I'm a slave. I'm a captive. I have no choice but to poke and prod you until I see you starting doing ministry. And that can go two ways. You can not like it and fire me, which is cool, that's fine. I can get back into it. I mean, I'm really liking golf, so don't worry about it. And my wife can take care of us, don't you worry. So if there's a point where you guys are like, you know, Dan, I don't think this is working out. Like, oh, this is so terrible. Let me just get my clothes. I actually would be heartbroken, so please don't ever. But the other response is that you hear what I'm saying, and you acknowledge it. I notice it's 10:21 as well.
Go for it.
Yeah, all right, brother. So I think about August as my New Year's start. This is how church calendars work. I do have New Year's resolutions. One of them is 20-minute sermons. I promise, guys. Doesn't mean I'm not going to rob you. I'm going to make sure. That's a skill thing. I'm going to get skillful enough to serve you well and do it in 20 minutes. But I hope you can be patient with me. But the point of ministry, my job is to help you minister. And you hear that and you think, I know who I am. I'm not a preacher. I'm not that guy who can sit there and pray. I can't sing. You guys don't understand what ministry is then. That's what you're thinking about. Did you not see what Jesus is doing as we've gone through Matthew? What is Jesus doing? He's healing. He's showing love and forgiveness. He's accepting. If you notice he's forgiving sins. You want to understand the power of Jesus. Jesus is healing. It's such a powerful way to talk about Jesus because what we talk about is there's something wrong with our world because we're broken. And Jesus can fix it right here, now, today. That's what we're talking about. You guys are supposed to be Jesus versions of you. My wife is supposed to be what it would be. I mean, she's a physician, so she's supposed to be the kind of doctor Jesus would be. Do you understand? And not just anywhere, but in Carrollton. She's supposed to be Dr. Jesus, Carrollton, Missouri.
grandparents accept it graciously. Our calling to teach our kids. And she has shown such seriousness in this that I am so blessed. It's encouraging. It's inspiring. She is praying. She's thinking about it. She's meditating on scriptures. If I am a day late in getting the scriptures to her, she will not let it happen. Why? Because she cares. Because she understands God has called her to be the Jesus that teaches our kids. How has God called you to be Jesus? That's your question. Then you come to me and you say, Dan, I think I'm supposed to be doing this. How do we work this out? You get it? That's where I come in. I'm the coach. Some of you are receivers, and I will help you figure out how to do that really well. Some of you are running backs. I don't run, but I know how to coach running backs. Not really, but remember this is an analogy. You guys, if some of you are linemen, not me, I never did that, I'm very sturdy, but I can show you how to sit still and push people, I guess. But the thing is, that's my job. You have a job to play. You are necessary, not sufficient. If we go on the field, and all of a sudden the right tackle is like, I'm not really a church guy. I'm not really a football guy. I'm going to go home. Bro, you can't just walk off the field. No, it's okay. It's just really my thing. I'm more spiritual than religious. You're going to go home and you're going to leave us like this? Yeah, but the sermons are boring. They're too long. I can preach shorter, I promise. No, come back, guys. Part of our job as a church is, very simply is, we need to find our right tackles. We need to find I believe in the running game. We need to get our fullback. We need to get a big dude to run in front of a little guy. Huh? I saw Pacheco get hit too many times last year. I don't like it. Officers say, this is what Paul's teaching us. Verse 13. Now I'm going to close and blow through. Ready? Because I made my point. Until we all attain to the unity of the faith and the knowledge of the Son of God, to mature manhood, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. This body is supposed to look like Jesus and the entirety of Jesus. Right now, if you think if someone walked in this room and they all had enough time to meet us, do you understand? God's expectation is that if that person sat there and met each of us, he would have met the fullness of Jesus. And if you're in this room, you're a part of that. Why? So that we may no longer be children, tossed to and fro by the waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by human cunningness, by craftiness and deceitful schemes, by every political rally, by every news cycle, by every new music fad, by every new scandal, every new pastor. We are supposed to be an institution that outlasts all of that stuff, that Jesus is always powerfully present in the exact same way, all of the time, despite how fickle the world is. Because God never changes. This verse 15, rather speaking the truth in love. We can't flow past that. Speaking the truth in love. How many people here have been told, listen, you're right, but I really wish you picked a better tone? That's like my whole marriage. I'm never wrong. I just say it the wrong way. That's the problem. I don't speak in love. My wife doesn't hear my love when I say certain things. That's my fault. That's what a church is supposed to be like. A place where you know what's up. Annie Mae's going to tell you what's up. But she loves you, so you're ready to hear it. And you know it comes from a good place, and so you're grateful for it. Truth and love. We are to grow up in every way into him who is the head. Again, what is the point of the growth? To be like Jesus. Again, no church did I ever feel like I belonged in.
But I knew why I wanted to be there, and it was always only Jesus.
And when each part is working properly, all of it together, joined and held together by every joint which it is equipped, then the body grows so that it builds itself up in love.
We're going to move. Let's move straight to the table. We're going to do invitation to communion right away. So if you're an elder or deacon and not polite, then get your sensors on. We're skipping quite a few things. It's my tradition.